Hello, and welcome to Runway Girl Network in Conversation, a deep dive into aviation and the passenger experience. I'm RGN Deputy Editor John Walton, and today I'm in conversation with Utteke de Jong, an aviation journalist at De Telegraaf in Amsterdam. Utteke, welcome to In Conversation.
Thank you.
So how did you first get involved in aviation?
6 years ago, my chief and editor said, we had that rotation system, and I worked then at the Financial Daily of the Netherlands. And he said, well, you've done this for a few years. Would you like to do transport and aviation? And I couldn't see the difference between a touring car and an Airbus, for example. But that's when I started and dived into the aviation industry.
So we're going to talk KLM today.
Yes.
As well as its parent group, Air France KLM, the mega hub that is Amsterdam Schiphol, yes, and aviation in the Netherlands.
Yes.
But first, thanks to our sponsor. In Conversation is brought to you by Bolteron, a Simona company, purveyor of high-performance thermoplastics for tomorrow's aircraft interiors. Next time you settle into your seat on an airplane and pull the window shade closed, consider the colour, thinness, and opacity of that material, designed precisely to keep the sunlight out so you can rest. That's Bolteron. Learn more at boltaron.com. Now, Utteke, in addition to being one of the Netherlands' foremost aviation correspondents, you're a registered accountant.
Yes.
So what are the latest numbers coming out of the Air France KLM group, and KLM in particular? Tell us about the airlines and what their current state is.
The figures came out a week ago, and they booked a net loss, but that was an exceptional because there was a suspension problem at KLM, and they settled that, so they had to take this loss, but that was non-cash. But on an operational, in the operational performance, KLM performed very well. They added for 66% of the whole operational result, while Air France, who is much bigger than the KLM, was good for 1/3 of that operational performance. So KLM is the motor between the financial performance of Air France KLM nowadays.
Yeah, that was really interesting to see. And of course, there are these sort of accountancy issues that we run up at. You know, you've got the sort of one-time loss and the write-downs and that kind of thing. But where does this put KLM and Air France in terms of being in a position of strength around, I guess, fending off the competition and also to develop their own networks and products?
Yes, well, they performed well, but there are a few threats to this because others perform better. Yesterday, EIG, the parent of British Airways and Welling, came out with figures, and they have less revenue than Air France KLM, but booked an operational result that was 2 times high that of Air France KLM's. So you see that, well, if you can't make it now in this booming economy, you can't make it never. So they have this result, and it's quite good, but it could have been better if they did some restructuring. KLM did, but at the Air France side, they did nothing in the last years. And, the future is in that sense a bit, unsure for Air France KLM. They have to do a lot. If there comes an economic downturn, well, their results will go down in like an airplane that's crashing, I expect. So they perform well, but everything is good. The market is good. The demand is good. So there is cash, and they can invest a little, but it is still not enough to be to be prepared for a big investment program, for example, to buy new fleet. So they're always lagging a bit behind. If you compare it with Lufthansa, Lufthansa is the he-man of the European aviation at this moment. They invest a lot, they bought a lot. Air France KLM did nothing. Yeah, Delta bought Air France KLM in that perspective. So there are still some challenges for them.
In terms of those challenges, are they legacy cost structures? Are they older aircraft that need to be replaced? Is it the fact that they're having problems in terms of getting the yields they want because of an older product? What's the structural reasons behind that?
Now, if you compare it compared to the Middle East, then the Middle East, they are known for their excellent service. Well, they are lagging a bit behind on that. So they have to invest more in their product, and they take that up very slow because there is not enough money. Yeah, this year there's a little bit money, but they have to do a lot if they want to step more forward to their competitors, if you know what I mean. So the future is in that perspective not very bright, and it's about cost structure. And at Air France, the unions are leading the company. There is a big profit last year, and what did they do in France and also at Transavia in the Netherlands? They strike this week, so that costs already a lot of money, and money that can be invested in the product or new planes, you name it. And there's also this investment thing on in a few years. I still don't know what they are going to do with their fleet. KLM has 10 Dreamliners that will be ordered, and then it's over. What are they going to do? Are they buying new 737s? So also on their investment program, it's not clear what they really want. And I think that's also there's also a financial uncertainty behind that. So everything comes down into cost, a lot of cost, because the competition is so hard for them. The ticket prices are not really up, and there are new competitors like Level in the market. So price pressure stays there. So the only thing you can do is lower the cost. And that is very difficult for Air France KLM because of this legacy issues, particularly in France. In KLM did a few things on that. The staff work more hours. They had these agreements with the staff that they worked for more hours in the last few years. But this year also, the staff in the Netherlands, they want to have more wages. So the KLM boss said already, okay, that's good. So you see, the labor costs will come up this year, and it is. I think they are praying that the oil price stays low, because if the oil price goes up further, they are immediately in trouble.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, I mean, one of the things that my British friends say is that KLM is the regional airline of the UK. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, with Amsterdam being so close to a lot of the UK, KLM is able to operate into a number of airports mm-hmm. there that BA, for example, has just abandoned, and that it doesn't make economical sense to operate for other European airlines. Mm-hmm. How much of an exposure is the Brexit risk for KLM, and what are they doing about that?
KLM is very worried on this Brexit. Peter Elbers, the boss of KLM, went to England a few times last year to lobby for a soft Brexit, because the UK is the second market for KLM. I thought it was 20% of their passengers are UK in and outbound. So 15% of the passengers of Schiphol is also UK from the UK, and because EasyJet has also a big base in Schiphol. So the Brexit is a very concerning thing. But I understood from sources that they are, the Netherlands and UK are now up to their old airline agreement before the Maastricht Treaty in 92. So they had this treaty from 1984, and that already it was already possible to fly in each other's country without any limits. So, but there's also the thing of customs that will be a thing in the Netherlands as well. So, for KLM and Schiphol, soft Brexit, whatever it may be, would be the best. But we are now a small country. The UK was traditional the Netherlands' ally in the whole EU. And while the UK is now leaving, the Netherlands are a bit left on their own. And we are a small country in the northwest. So I have to see how this will work. But on the other hand, I think, if they want themselves, both UK and the Netherlands want to work it out. So my feeling is that the traffic will move smoothly, that they will find a solution themselves.
I think we all certainly hope so. We are hearing a lot of different options, shall we say, from the various politicians on both sides of the channel. It seems a little ridiculous that we're nearly, 2 years on and we still have sort of, maybe it'll work.
I understood from sources within KLM, we get the 1984 treaty between the UK and the Netherlands from a drawer, and we can put that on effect whenever the Brexit is happening. So let's hope that for KLM, because, and also for Schiphol, because when the Brits are not flying through Schiphol anymore, that's a number that's between profit and loss. This is very and in that perspective, a few months ago, the CEO of Air France KLM, Jean-Marc Janiak, he said in an interview with The Guardian that the British market was not that important to them. And I said to Peter Elbers, the boss of KLM, I said, is the UK not important anymore to you? He said, it's extremely important to us. So you see, within the collaboration of Air France and KLM, without UK, KLM would be lost.
I find it interesting that your sources are saying that, the Netherlands is able to sort of dust off its existing treaty. My understanding was that any relations between the EU and the UK in terms of air access had to be negotiated through Brussels rather than through national capitals. Are your sources saying something different around that?
Yes, Michel Barnier is opposing this hands-on solution from the UK and the Netherlands. It's not official, but apparently there is contact on some levels on this. So, but Brussels does not agree this, but they have to figure that out as well. But both the UK and the Netherlands are willing to, because landing rights is still a bilateral thing. So that could be the escape. So the EU says you can't do that, but to get in the whole world, I think it's still when you want to fly somewhere, you have to negotiate on a bilateral level. So they have to figure that out in Brussels, of course, but this is what I understood from sources.
It will be really interesting to see how that develops over the pretty much a year until.
But Michel Barnier says no, you can't do that. But who is Michel Barnier in this perspective? He is important, but we have also this aviation law. Yeah? I understood from sources that they will figure this out, but I don't know. It's still. It's getting darker every day about this whole Brexit thing and what will happen. So my information is from eight weeks ago. So I don't know what has changed with that. So it for the Netherlands it's very important.
So looking beyond that sort of 20% of UK either based or bound traffic, what are KLM's key markets for the rest of its network?
The US, China is very big. From Schiphol, you can fly into a lot of destinations in China, and there's also a big network to India. They developed that in the last 3 years, I think. They had one service a day, and now it's adding up to six cities or something already. So KLM is pushing forward the Indian market, and they have this collaboration, of course, with Jet Airways. They made it official in November. In the US, of course, with Delta. Delta has a big hub in Amsterdam. Together with KLM, they operate more than 30 flights a day to the US. So they had to give two slots to Norwegian because the market power of KLM was too big on the US. So so that are the key markets. There are some destinations. Africa, of course. We have some destinations who are a bit oil related in the Middle East and Indonesia, for example, because we have Shell, the big oil company. And there are also some, they started up South America a few years ago. They have, of course, this partnership with Gol and the low-cost carrier of Brazil. So, they have expanded the network impressively the last 6 years since I cover Air France KLM.
So what's the ratio between originating and destination Amsterdam traffic and sort of either Europe to world or world to world connections?
It's more than 50% is transfer, because the Dutch market is very we are a small country, and we have this big Schiphol with more than 200 direct routes. And that can exist because we have this big transfer point of KLM at Schiphol, and our OD traffic. That's more European. The European is their dominance.
Of course, KLM was also one of the first airlines to create a joint venture. Obviously, back with Northwest, which was subsumed into Delta. I mean, I remember growing up and seeing those two-sided KLM and Northwest DC-10s back in the day. So what benefits does being part of that sort of increasingly large and increasingly immunized transatlantic joint venture with Delta, now with the Virgin Atlantic, and of course the Alitalia question, plus Air France as part of the Air France KLM group. What benefits does that bring to KLM as an airline?
It's the reason they are still here, I think. Without this transatlantic partnership, they wouldn't have been here today. This is so big and so huge for them, also in terms of revenue in routes. I already mentioned 30 flights a day into the US. So that's immense. That's the revenue of this joint venture is 10 billion a year, I as good as I remember. So it's their lifeline, and this lifeline is now being attacked by a Norwegian in Paris. So there are some clouds at a clear sky, and there were also some competition issues, and the European Commission said they had too much power on these routes. And KLM's existence comes from this transatlantic partnership. It's their backbone, and also the backbone of Schiphol through that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I find it really interesting the way that Norwegian is in some ways both a threat and you know, Norwegian's own issues are creating opportunities. I see pretty much every day some leased in aircraft operating for Norwegian on these routes that they're trying to sell to travelers as a Norwegian operated thing with a Dreamliner that's got great entertainment, and it's some old A330 that they've hired in from Wamos or someone. How does KLM's brand positioning, how is that changing as a result of a need to compete with Norwegian? And increasingly, we're going to see more airlines like Primera Air starting up with A321neo LRs and 737 Maxes to do point-to-point. What's KLM's brand positioning in response to that?
Well, they have to invest in the product. They say that they cannot compete on price with Norwegian, as an example. So they have to do it on service, and that's why it's very important that they try to keep up with passenger. But I don't know if the passenger still loves a lot of service or loves the price more, because KLM is not has not a first class, for instance, only business class. They were one of the last airlines who put away the flatbed, who got in the flatbeds on their whole fleet. I thought that process is maybe almost finished now. So they are in that perspective the last of the big airlines on such service things. So they say they want to invest in service, but I don't know if the service is they say they are down to earth and they are very nice to their customers, but I don't know if that differs that much if you compare it in the price difference. So it's a bit a difficult position for them.
Yeah, and I mean, of course, no airline is going to advertise and say, yes, we're terrible to people, but our customer service is awful.
No, but you know what I mean? Are the Norwegian stewardesses not doing different things than that of KLM's? And nowadays, that's very difficult to see. Yeah, even if you fly economy in with one of the legacy airlines, it's not that you have that lot of room leg. Yeah. The trend is the other way around. But KLM tries to do the best with an economy comfort, of course, and to do some ancillaries. And for example, Air France KLM started June, a brand new airline. It started in the 1st of December. And what could have been, they could have been the first who put Wi-Fi on their planes. That would be something that would attract customers. But no, they didn't have that yet. Yeah, we are working on that, is what they are saying. So the world is moving very fast. And if you start a new airline for millennials, I would expect that such a thing as free Wi-Fi on a plane, that could bring the millennial to your plane. And yeah, now it's a bit it's an Air France plane with a new color, and there are some nice beers on board. But yeah, is that one does not travel with June because they have this Parisian beer on board, I think. So It's again the question on, is there enough money to invest? And if all you see that also on the June project, the thing on passengers' experience this time is, do you have Wi-Fi on board and good working Wi-Fi on board? And if you have, you have the customer. And you get some drinks and you get some food, but that's the distinctive thing at this moment. That's how I see it. Maybe you see it different. So you see with all they try something, but there is not enough money to do it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think that June is, I've got the marketing for June. I mean, it's a rooftop bar, blah, blah, blah. I mean, it just seems, it seems like old people trying to create something they think young people will be attracted by. And actually, no one cares about your carrier for young people if, as you say, it doesn't offer Wi-Fi. I mean, this is starting to be a hygiene issue, right? It's not a thing that you can advertise that you have anymore in many parts of the world. I mean, in the US, pretty much every flight you'll be on will have Wi-Fi of some form. Europe, of course, is much later because of the lack of ground-based solutions. But, you know, there are, you know, airlines are already installing Wi-Fi. And to not install it on the sort of June subsidiary, it is as baffling to me as it is to you. You know, I think you're quite right. If you're aiming at that younger market, you have to have something that isn't just, oh yeah, we made an airline for the kids, right? I mean, no one's going to care. And anyone who doesn't count themselves as, you know, cool enough to be like on an airline where all the staff are wearing trainers,
yeah,
that's going to turn people off, right?
So KLM is putting its brand like it's down to earth, you get a good price, quality, you get smooth connection at Schiphol. So that's how they put themselves in the market.
Yeah.
So
I also think they have a really good story to tell about customer service, particularly around the many different channels that you have to contact KLM. You know, you can use Messenger, you can use Twitter, you can use all the social media options that you want. And KLM's always been an early adopter of that. And I kind of feel like they don't make enough of that in their advertising. Because part of the problem with LCCs, of course, is that it's expensive to contact them. And if you have a question that's outside, you know, what time is my flight? It can often be difficult to get in touch. So yeah, I think there's definitely a space there for KLM to take in that market. You know, I mean, I think as aviation journalists, we hear all the time, you know, Norwegian leaves passengers sleeping in airport for 2 days because they can't get a plane. And I don't know about whether the domestic market in the Netherlands hears something different, but I don't recall hearing a KLM horror story like that to the same extent. Do you?
No, on average, no. Yeah, last year we had a few families who couldn't travel to the US because Trump had this ban on seven Islamic countries in a weekend. Mm-hmm. It's almost a year ago, I think, now.
Yeah.
And some five families got stuck on Schiphol, and they were for 2 days behind the customs. So that was the only thing, the only few times I heard such a story on KLM. Most of the time, well, they you can pretty rely on them, I think. And also, their cost in your customer contact. Well, they have always most of the time they are reliable, and they invest a lot in this digitalization, in this communication with WeChat and pay with the newest pay by through WhatsApp. They introduced, so it's about the customer journey. That it's easy to get a ticket and easy to get through Schiphol. That's where they want to put themselves in the market.
Yeah, yeah. So let's turn to Schiphol. Obviously, they have a very good hub service. But they too have just had their annual results out. What did that say for the airport and for what its future looks like?
Well, there is a big problem with Schiphol. This week, our Minister of Infrastructure said that Schiphol reached its limits this year, and she won't allow them to grow them further in the coming 3 years because there are this old. In 2008, there was a kind of an agreement that Schiphol could manage 510,000 movements flying movements, and that limit is now reached. And for further growth, flights had to be passed on to the new to be developed airport Lelystad. And this Lelystad is postponed this week, but the Minister of Infrastructure said that she wouldn't make a temporary solution for Schiphol in between. KLM is very angry at that because it weakens their position between in the Air France KLM group, of course. And so, yeah, Schiphol can't do anything in the coming years. And they have all this investments going on in new terminal and new pier. And one thinks, for what? For what? If you already have the maximum of movements. And there's also pressure from some society, from environmental groups, that Schiphol should not grow any further at all. So there's a big resistance at this moment in the Netherlands against the airport and against aviation. The boss of Schiphol, who will leave in a few weeks, said in his New Year's speech, "Why don't the Dutch love their aviation anymore?" So if the boss from an airport says something, it was a bit pathetic, but. Everybody loved Schiphol, but the atmosphere is a bit less enthusiastic on that. So it comes down of everyone thinks about the environment and the climate agreement of Paris, but my neighbor must stop with flying. That's a bit the atmosphere in the Netherlands right now. But our parliament has to approve the plans for the coming 20 years on the development of aviation in Schiphol. So there are important years of a year is about to begin. And what it's essential also for us, for our economy. What will we do with aviation? Because the network of Schiphol that is bigger than the own market is through all the transfer traffic of KLMs. It attracts companies from all over the world, and we now have established the routes to India, so that brings our economy, of course, a lot. But no one wants to see that anymore. So there are even sounds of let Schiphol shrink a bit. So. In that perspective, it's interesting times here. What should we do with aviation? Should Schiphol grow any further? What should we do with their new airport in Lelystad? That it was a plan that it should be used for leisure traffic. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of resistance by a few groups at this point in time. And there's also this thing about safety. This week a report came out about safety on Schiphol. How can Schiphol grow further with the current with the current infrastructure? Well, there are still 50,000 movements to go, but in the growth of air traffic for the estimated air traffic in the coming years, 50,000 movements is nothing. So our politicians say now, the airlines should use bigger aircrafts. Yeah, that's of course not a solution, because aircraft investments that are programs who are running for 10, 20 years. KLM just bought Embraers and 787s. They cannot turn that in a day into A380s or something. And that are big investment programs, and it's very sensitive, of course, which airplane you put on routes. Yeah, there's the range between profit and loss is very small. So, the government or our parliament has to decide what we should do, but they don't have the right knowledge. If you hear such thing as, "Oh, okay, let them use bigger planes," yeah, said, not practical in the coming few years.
Yeah, so, yeah, absolutely.
And also, Schiphol is planning a new terminal. So I already asked the CEO, why are you building a new terminal? For whom? Because Schiphol is full. what are you doing? Why are you spending half a billion on what?
Yeah.
It will. We will go keeping up with growth. I said, are you sure? Yeah. I think the people will see that yeah, aviation is very important for their economy. I said, well, I hope it for you as well. But the parliament decides, of course. So, yeah, they're on a slippery path in that perspective.
Yeah, I mean it's certainly struck me that. You know, having the new terminal looks amazing, right? I mean, it's this very sort of modern, almost a sort of Le Corbusier sort of big glass front, big open, spacious, futuristic block. I mean, it looks amazing. And you know, maybe that will give people a little bit of that wow factor that they experience going through some other airports in the world, which will hopefully, you know, make people sort of... more appreciative of the benefits that aviation does bring.
Yeah, I understood that this terminal is good for 100,000 movements if you look at the passengers' capacity. But this week, a report came out of the safety board of the government that there is still room for 50,000 in the current situation. So, well, if you look at that, you can almost guess that the 600,000 will not be reached. But they are building now this terminal for that capacity. So it's kind of, it's quite, there are a few risks. And Schiphol still, also in with the new terminal, they keep on doing the one terminal concept, and on all the big airports in the world, who are this big as Schiphol, they have all terminals on different spots that you get by an air train from A to B or from 1 to 2, and Schiphol still wants to do this one terminal concept, and that's in a logistic way not very smart if it becomes very busy, because everything has to come in together in one point. So a satellite terminal would have been better if you really want to grow and do it safe, so you can distract the traffic from each other. So I asked that again, but they are not that visionary.
Also, from the passenger experience point of view, the one terminal concept is all very well and good. But, you know, I've experienced, you know, if you come in at one end of the Schiphol terminal and you leave from the other end of that terminal, it's a long way.
Yeah.
You know, it's a real hike.
Yeah.
And you know, and look, sometimes that's nice after a long flight. You know, I love being able to stretch my legs, and you know, there's that lovely outer sort of outdoor deck area, which is very pleasant. But you know, if your flight's delayed and you've got to, you know, really hoof it, it can be a bit of a run through those corridors.
Yeah. Yeah, it's too far, I think, for nowadays standards. So I think they have the wrong strategy with this new terminal, because there is already an air train thing in constructed. They only have to lay the rails, and but the space, they designated that 25 years ago already. So the space is there to put some air train there, but I asked the boss of Schiphol, why don't you use an air train? It becomes too far for passengers to walk all these distances. Well, walking is healthy, he said. Yeah, but that's a different story. If you have, as you mentioned, if you have to transfer and your plane is delayed, so I don't know why they didn't do this. Yeah, I think it has something to do with money again.
Well, Itika, thank you. That's it for today's conversation. Listeners, we certainly hope you enjoyed it, and we're always keen to find out what you think. Please do continue to email me at john@runwaygirlnetwork.com with any suggestions. Thank you also to our guest, Itika de Jong. Itika, where can our listeners find you?
I'm on Twitter a lot. You can find my stories there, and of course on the website of De Telegraaf.
What's your Twitter username?
My Twitter is @ Itika de Jong, YTEKEDEJONG.
Perfect. And as ever, you can find me on Twitter at ThatJohn, and everything from RGN on Twitter at RunwayGirl, and of course at RunwayGirlNetwork.com. If you're enjoying these conversations, please leave a rating and review wherever you get your podcasts. And thanks for listening.